Thank God. He probably made a phone call for us.
Yeah.
He took a time.
Okay, let's go ahead and we'll get started. Can we? Where's our time? 3:12. All right. So the meeting will come to order. So we have a pretty robust agenda for the day. However, since we don't have quorum, it's my responsibility to announce that we don't have quorum. Our action items have to wait until we do have quorum. And it's important that we get quorum today because we have graduates that we have to approve. And without quorum, that means that we have to find another way to get everyone's vote before graduation, which is kind of a tough spot to be in right now. I don't think we can approve the agenda.
Right.
So we don't have any votes. We'll go straight to our action or not our action items, but our informational items. And we have two items that appear as action items, but they are actually informational items. So we have informational items, and this has to do with memorial minutes. We won't approve the agenda and we won't approve the minutes from the last meeting unless we achieve quorum. So if we could ask Dr. Trifini Appeal to present a memorial minute for Dr. Ruth Trinidad Galvan.
My name is Trifinia Peel Eady. I am chair and associate professor in the Department of Language, Literacy, and Sociocultural Studies in the College of Education here at the University of New Mexico. Thank you for this opportunity to offer a few words of remembrance and in celebration of our colleague, Ruth Trinidad Galvan. Ruth Trinidad Galvan was a professor in LLSS and faculty in the Educational Thought and Sociocultural Studies concentration, ETSS. I have known her since I began my appointment here at UNM. She was an esteemed leader and colleague in our department. Specializing in decolonial and global feminist epistemologies and pedagogies, globalization, and transmigration, Ruth worked with a fierce passion and critical lens, fighting for women's equality and equity for all peoples. Born May 23, 1967, in El Paso, Texas, and raised in Los Angeles, California, Ruth was daughter to two Mexican immigrant parents and sister to four younger siblings. She earned a Bachelor of Arts degree from UCLA, her master's degree from California State, Los Angeles, and her PhD in Education, Culture, and Society from the University of Utah. She was a teacher, scholar, mother, daughter, sister, and a friend. Her repertoire of work features two books, several refereed journal articles and book chapters, underscoring her real-world commitments to the education of Latinx youth and the celebration of life, learning, and criticality in communities often overlooked in everyday discourses that frame humanity. She was probably best known for her book, Women Who Stay Behind, Pedagogies of Survival in Rural Transmigrant Mexico, an ethnography of women affected by migration. Her work transformed our thinking about historical views of the poor and working class people in Mexico. Ruth lived a life that demanded notice and inspired others. She was a trailblazer in border and immigrant studies. Her research in Zacatecas, Mexico, called much-needed attention to immigration reform and economic recession in the U.S., and to the experiences of immigrants returning to their community of origin. I've been struck by Ruth's words when she wrote, "One does not merely survive domination, but chooses to satiate one's hopes and dreams in creative and joyful ways." In short, her work, her life, is a reflection of her story, the stories she was destined to tell, and the legacy she was destined to leave behind. Ruth received numerous recognitions and awards for her work over the years. We will cherish her scholarship, her legacy, and lively and warm personality. To cherish her memory are her devoted husband, Brad New, and her three daughters, Xiomara, Ana Yancy, and Emilitzi Ortega Trinidad. I want to let you know that Chicano and Chicano Studies and the Southwest Hispanic Research Institute have established a scholarship fund in Ruth's honor. Please do contact Antoinette Rael for more information at areel164@unm.edu. In peace, in love, and in eternal solidarity, rest well, Ruth Trinidad Galvan.
Thank you, Trifenia. Colleagues, will you join me in 1 minute of silence? Thank you. Unfortunately, colleagues, we have lost yet another colleague. Dr. Tim Krebs, would you please come forward and speak on behalf of Dr. Kendra Koivu?
Thank you. My name is Tim Krebs. I'm the chair of the Political Science Department here at UNM. Kendra Koivu began her career in the UNM Political Science Department in the fall of 2012 after completing her PhD at Northwestern University. In 2013, just after the birth of her second child, Professor Koivu was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer. Since then, and in spite of her prognosis, she wrote a book, published several scholarly articles, became an important voice in the methodology of political science, mentored many students, and was granted tenure and promotion at UNM in the spring of 2019. Professor Koivu made a home in Albuquerque with her husband, Tony Aronica. This fall, she was able to see her daughter off to Grinnell College and her son into kindergarten. Her body finally succumbed to the cancer she endured for five years on the night of September 27th, 2019, at the age of 40. She is dearly missed by her friends, colleagues, and students at UNM, and she will be remembered for her striking wit, tenacity, and extremely gifted academic mind. As chair, I appointed Dr. Koivu to be our department's graduate director. Consequently, I had the opportunity to work with her on an almost daily basis over the last year. Apart from her brilliance as a scholar and teacher, which was reflected and verified in her tenure file, the thing that impressed me most was her uncommon courage, bravery, and toughness in the face of her illness. I will never forget it. For more information on Kendra, please see our website. There's also a scholarship fund there, and there's information pertaining to it. So if you would like to donate, that would be very much appreciated. Thank you, and thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Krebs. Rick, can we put
I sent you a picture.
Colleagues, will you please join me in a moment of silence for Dr. Koivu? Thank you. I feel compelled to add, you know, these moments are extremely important to our campus life. That this is part of who we are, family, and these moments are important. So thank you to you both, and please share our concerns, our thoughts, our condolences with the faculty in your departments. At the loss of these dear colleagues. And even though we recognize our colleagues this afternoon, we also recognize the unfortunate loss of some devoted staff, as well as the students that we've lost this semester. But for right now, thank you for this remembrance of our colleagues. We have quorum, and I'd like to move back to the beginning of the agenda and ask, are there any additions to or comments regarding our agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. The next item on our agenda is approval of the October 22nd, 2019 meeting minutes. Are there any corrections, additions, comments? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. I'd like to move next to our provost report. Provost Holloway?
Felt like a really long one. Thanks, Vinny. Thanks, everyone, and I really actually like to especially thank the Faculty Senate for holding this particular Faculty Senate meeting up here in the HSC campus. I think that's a really important step, and I hope we'll continue to think about those ways that we remind ourselves that we're all one university connected through our devotion to our students and the scholarship that we do. Can you guys hear me in the back? Cool. All right. So just some quick updates, and I'll try and be quick since you know, we got started a little bit late here. One thing I want to do at these opportunities in general is I'm going to try and highlight a piece of research or scholarship that's going on. I think it's an important thing for us to do to... So I'm selecting a piece that happens to have had some recent attention, but across campus, our colleagues are doing amazing work in furthering their disciplines, furthering knowledge, furthering our service to the state through their scholarly work. And so I do want to take a moment to highlight a few. And actually, the one I was going to talk about flashed on the screen a little while ago, and that's a new archaeological project around tracking the archaeological history of southeastern New Mexico and actually western Texas as well. And this is work that is being carried out by Drs. Della Russo and Alexander Carota from the Department of Contract Archaeology, which, as you know, is a part of the Maxwell Museum. And the work that they're doing really is to develop a detailed chronology of perishable archaeological artifacts from southeastern New Mexico and West Texas. Many of these are artifacts that have already been collected and are coming from existing museum collections, but some of them will be, they'll also use new technologies to redocument some existing rock shelter sites from which these artifacts are found. And so they'll do carbon dating. They're using new drone technologies to map some of these rock shelter sites and so on. And they're doing all of this in a way that is including indigenous populations who can make claims to these sites and these artifacts to make sure that none of the artifacts have ceremonial or religious value to them as well. And so this is supported by a $200,000 grant from the U.S. Department of the Interior, and I'd just like to recognize that as a piece of the important scholarship that goes on at the University of New Mexico. I also want to make sure that I take some time to highlight the continuing and growing relationship building that we're doing with the UNM branch campuses. These four branch campuses are very much, again, a part of us as one university. And there's been some really good work going on at those campuses and some really good partnerships developing. Last week, the Dean of Education, Deb Riffenberry, and her team spent some time at UNM Gallup, where we're developing a bachelor's completion program for educational assistants working in the Gallup-McKinley School District so that those educational assistants can complete their bachelor's degree, become certified as teachers, and do that locally within the Gallup-McKinley area so, one, they can both continue in their work as they do that, but also be positioned and placed to be responsive culturally and linguistically to the needs of that location. It's part of a set of work that we're doing in support of the Yazzie Martinez ruling that happened here in New Mexico, so important service to the state. UNM Los Alamos is developing a bachelor's completion degree in collaboration with the College of Engineering here, targeted at staff at Los Alamos National Labs who want to complete a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. And they've had some really good work in organizing and designing that. They've done an information session for potential students and are seeing a pretty good response from that as well. So, again, great partnerships developing between UNM Albuquerque and the branch campuses. Another piece of work that's ongoing around partnerships is the provost at San Diego State University, Hector Ochoa, who used to be the dean of education here, reached out to us. And he is leading the formation of an organization called Access 2020, Action Collaborative for Enhancing STEM Success, which is a program at Hispanic-serving research institutions focused on enhancing STEM success for that population of students. And so we're becoming part of the inaugural membership of this group with San Diego State University, UTEP, University of Arizona, UC Santa Barbara, and UC Merced, and Mary Jo McDaniel will be the point of contact for that. We're aiming for a workshop that will happen April 5th through 7th of next year to start to develop that consortium and what it might be. Let me also mention an upcoming event early next year, January 15th. The Offices of Assessment and the Office of Institutional Analytics are going to put together a data storytelling workshop for faculty and staff who want to learn about some of the existing data analytics tools we have, who may have questions around student learning, student achievement that they would like to explore. And so that data storytelling workshop is going to be put together to help us and our colleagues explore the data that the institution has in order to answer questions about student learning. And so please, as you see announcements of that, feel free to share that with colleagues who might be interested. And then finally, I'll mention a little bit about the Grand Challenges initiative and where that's going. Grand Challenges has helped to support seven UNM faculty who've been selected as teaching fellows for the 2020 Academic Affairs General Education Teaching Fellows Program. And so these seven colleagues are going to be working together to develop pieces of existing courses or new courses themed off of the three Grand Challenge initiatives that the university is supporting. So they're going to be working together as a cohort and moving into next summer developing the educational materials that they want to deploy in both existing and new general education courses. They represent seven different academic disciplines, and so we're trying to get a lot of breadth in how the Grand Challenges reach into and engage the academic enterprise of the institution. We've also put together a student research web page around the Grand Challenges, so you can get on the Grand Challenges website and have a look at that. Sustainable Water Program is developing some community-engaged programs as well, and so trying to reach out beyond the institution to New Mexico communities to directly connect the scholarship and research they're doing with Grand Challenge work. And the Grand Challenges, I should also mention, also supported the new Collegiate Recovery Center, which is a new center that's been put together in Logan Hall to give students who are facing addiction challenges and recovering from addiction a place to gather, a place to call their own, where they can get together for programming, conversation and support circles, not a treatment center, but a place for those students to be able to come together with others facing similar challenges and just have a community to support them. And then finally, I'll mention that the Successful Aging Program out of the Grand Challenges has awarded its first set of projects supporting 16 different principal investigators across UNM. And so a fair bit happening there as well. And I'll stop there, and if there are questions folks have, happy to entertain those until Finney kicks me off the stage. Thank you.
That wasn't a bad kick.
Is that?
Because it wasn't a bad kick. Okay. Unless there are objections, I'd actually like to move forward in our agenda to the consent agenda. Are there any objections? Hearing none, we'll move forward to the consent agenda. That consent agenda contains three items. The first is our fall 2019 degree candidates. The second is Faculty Senate committee appointments. And then the third are the Form C, and there are a number of them from the Faculty Senate Curricula Committee. And if we can thumb through those on screen there. We might go a little bit slower, Rick, so that folks can... Can you go back to the top of that list, please?
It's in the agenda.
And it's for those of you who have an agenda, it's there. But for those who are watching the screen, can we scroll through those? Is there any discussion? If there's no discussion, I'd like us to move on to the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Ayes have it. We'll move back then to item number six on our list, the governmental relations update. Director Kit Dameron, will you please come help us with that?
Good afternoon. Thank you all so very much. Thank you, Faculty Senate, for inviting me to be here. I first want to thank Faculty Senate for your work, the amazing work you do on behalf of all faculty. As still a faculty member here, I really thank you for the work that you do, the untold hours. I'm already excited to work with the Government Affairs group of your Faculty Senate and look forward to more work with that. So just want to give you an overview of the legislation, what we're doing right now, what will be happening as we go farther. I don't know why my picture has gone. There we go. It's going to come in like that. So I've just been appointed as the Chief Government Relations Officer last month, actually. I've just completed 4 weeks of that. I'm still in faculty at the College of Nursing and School of Medicine. I'm still directing the PhD program, our health policy PhD program. We're revamping that PhD program at the College of Nursing. So it's been some busy times, but I'm very much excited to be back in the government world. I recently finished my term as Cabinet Secretary for the state of New Mexico for these past 4 years, so this space is very familiar to me, of course. So I just want to talk briefly about the interim session and, of course, the regular session. We're in the interim session right now, so there's lots goes on during the interim legislative session each year. You can see through there. That's when the committees meet during this time. Members are appointed in May of the first session of each legislature. So remember, a legislative session is 2 years. So we're in the second year of the 54th legislature, and there are interim committees during those times. You can see where they run. This is where we really talk about the broad topics, and there's time for the legislators to really have conversation about these, time for us to tell them more information. The committees have more time. They're not processing bills, they're not making legislation, but it's a time to really understand these topics, so there's much more in-depth discussion. And there's a lot of talk about bills that will be coming up in the regular session, and ideally we work out the kinks of those. Many times bills are really revised during this time. Then, of course, during the regular session, which starts when? Anybody know? January 21st.
Yep.
Pretty much always after Martin Luther King, but it's usually always that third Tuesday. That's when bills are introduced. And, of course, in this 30-day session, remember, in the even years, we have the 30-day sessions. In the odd years, we have the 60-day sessions. In a 30-day session, it's only budget and whatever else the governor says can be discussed on the governor's call. And so we have hearings on the proposed legislation. So I want to let you know what we've been doing during the interim with many of you here, and I really want to recognize my colleague, Matt Munoz, who's there in the audience. I've worked with Matt long before I was in this position, and so it's delightful to be able to work with Matt again. Connie Beimer also is part of our team. She is on vacation as we speak here. That's the team of us that oversee all this for Maine Health Science Center and branches. We work with Janisa and Jessica from the Health Science Center side, and then we work with the chancellors of the branch campuses. But all this runs through the Office of Government Relations. So during the interim of this year, 2019, there have been a number of meetings with state legislators and senior UNM staff. This is just showing you how many representatives and senators have we had individual meetings with at this time. Then a bit more detail. So we've had 44 interim committees that have been attended by the UNM Government Relations staff. 23 of those committees have been hosted on UNM campuses, and that's great. Of course, we get the legislators to any of our campuses, Maine Health Science Center branches. They get to see the taxpayers' money at work. They get to see what we're really doing, so we'd like to have as many of those as we can. There were 53 total interim presentations by UNM faculty, staff, and students, and there were actually 59 representatives who gave those. So it's been a busy interim session. So when we're not in the regular session, don't think your government relations staff are just sitting around having a holiday. This is an unending work. It's 365 days. People hear about it. We go back a long ways on this kind of stuff. So the work goes on year-round. You do a lot of this relationship building. You're talking about the bills that you want to have. So you're working with our 112 legislators at the state throughout this whole time. Of course, through our office, we also deal with federal government relations, not only state, and also county and city. So talk now then going into the second session of the 54th legislature, because again, everybody was elected, their first term was last year, they're in their second of this. So let's talk a bit about the priorities that we have. Now, how we do the priorities for this large institution we call the University of New Mexico is truly sausage being made on our own campus, much less there at the state capitol. We work with deans of main campus, we work with department chairs at the Health Science Center, we work with chancellors at branch campuses, we work with UNM leadership. Each of you, everybody has ideas of what we could be asking for money or what we need. We are part of the Constitution. We're a state university. No matter how much of our money comes from the state, and it varies. And here at UNM, about a fifth of the money comes from the state to fund us. We are called out in the Constitution, so we're a state institution. And there's lots of need. Number one is all our buildings, just the buildings alone, just to maintain those. Faculty needs, all types of aspects with that. And we get money from the state in really three kind of main ways. We have our ING, Instruction General money I'll be talking about. Capital money comes typically through bonds, GO bonds, or severance tax bonds. And then we also have something called RPSPs, Research and Special Projects, Public Service Projects. So we've worked with all of you through this interim, and this work was already done before I started this position in October, about what our priority is going to be. So our priorities for the budget for the 2020 session, as you can see up there. First of all, we are aligning with CUP, the Council of University Presidents. That's where all the seven universities come together. We are asking for 8% new money. Now, remember, each year the state gives UNM, all of our 31 public higher education institutions, money, okay? For years, the state's been giving that. Do you know, for many years, we were number one in the whole country for the proportion of state budget that went to colleges and universities. For many years, we were number one with that. We're out there just now, number two and number three. We're as high as almost 16% of the state budget came to higher ed. We're around 12% right now. Many, many states are around 6-7%. So for a long time, this state has believed in higher education and has put money into our colleges and universities. The quid pro quo for that, not in relation to current quid pro quo, but we've discussed the quid pro quo academy long before Congress was, is that we provide lower tuition because the state was giving us some larger amounts of money than other states. That's why we wanted to keep our tuition low. So for many years, so there's this pot of money that needs to, can you still hear me when I step away? Because it's too hard for me to stay behind a podium. That's not going to work. So with this amount of money, so these legislators have been as much as $900 million, almost $1 billion. How would a legislator decide which institution gets what? That's a big decision, right? So you know how we made that decision for many years? We made that decision on how many square feet we had. So during those years, guess what happened? We built more buildings. So through the years, there's been different ways the legislature decides how much money we're going to give to our colleges and universities. In 2012, we changed that to what's called a performance-based funding formula. And the legislature actually required our colleges and universities to perform. And by perform, they mean, first and foremost, what do you think is the most important thing to them?
Graduation.
Right. Who are you getting out the door? And not just graduation rates, because they recognize all the unique, you know, our traditional students we all know are now the minority, the non-traditional students for all of us. So first and foremost, they're interested in how many are you graduating, and are you graduating underserved students, financially at-risk students, etc. So we have this funding formula. So we're recommending that there's 8% new money put into this funding formula, because the way it's determined each year, you take how much money higher ed got last year, and of course we always want more money added to that. Some years we redistribute some of that base from the previous year. We call that the redistribution money that comes out of that. We're recommending there be 8% new money on top of the base that came from last year. The higher ed department had different recommendations. LFC, higher department, everybody have all their recommendations. At the end of the day, the legislators decide this. That's why they're the appropriators. That's why it's very important that we have good testimony in the Senate Finance Committee and, of course, the House Appropriations, where those decisions are made. We also want parity increase with all higher education institutions with the medical school, because medical school does not get ING funds in the typical way. We want some parity with that. We want the compensation formula reform, because what happens, you know, the decision made, let's give 4% raise to all of our for all of our faculty and staff to have those raises, right? The legislator, all they pretty much see is that ING money. They don't see all the research grants that we're bringing in. They don't see other types of unrestricted funds. So they calculate, you know, 4% off the ING and then say, hey, now you have to stretch that 4% off all these other pockets. So we're wanting some reform about how we're going to have that compensation calculated so we don't get in messes with that. We're recommending 5% compensation based on a new calculation. And then the medical school is going is requesting free medical tuition, and that is $6 million request yearly for students who choose to stay in New Mexico. This is an emphasis to bring have medical students, after they do their residencies, come back here and stay in New Mexico. That's our overall budget priorities. Now for capital, for the GO bond, remember the bonds, that you have to have a bill that becomes law that approves the bonds that then goes to the voters the following November, okay? So for the GO bond, these are the priorities that we're going forth with this session based on all the conversations we've had with all of you, based on leadership, and there's going to be some here that y'all like, some here that you don't. Work with us through this. I have some things to say about that at the end. So nursing and population health, that's for the new building that will house both the College of Nursing and College of Population Health, Center for Collaborative Art and Technology. You can see on there the different types of capital and buildings that we will be requesting, including from our branch campuses. We also have some other capital outlay money. The Cancer Center needs a good radiology lab in order to continue on with their NCI designation and some additional campus infrastructure. Then there's the RPs, the Research and Public Service Projects. And you know, all these years as secretary, I had to look at all the RPSPs from all the institutions and make decisions on all those. So it's good to be back at the university building that up again. Many are submitted. This is what gets vetted. Not that higher education approved all of these, but this is what we're going forth. You will see some things in there that you're familiar with, some you're not, and all these slides we've made available, so you don't need to be taking notes on all this because it's just so interesting, right? You just want to write all this stuff down. But at any rate, this is our RPSP priorities that we have, ranging from all kinds of things in here. Sometime it'd be very interesting to talk about the history of RPSPs and where that's going in the future in our state with that. And then we have some that are health science center oriented as well. Just to help you remember with the research and public service projects, last year we got $38 million in RPSP funding. This year we're going for $63 million of that. And again, we work with all of you, work with main campus, health science center campus, our branch campuses. There were 36 projects that were continuation of funding, because in RPSPs you can put in, some projects need to come in each year for continuation of funding. Then there were 13 new programs. We arranged over 20 in-person presentations between UNM staff and state agency staff. They're here. There are RPSP hearings that happen in the fall. We have to go present why we want to have this happen with that. Let me just talk a bit about the process for interacting with legislators. We have policies around this. The policies are a bit different for main campus and health science center. And health science center, many of us are on 12-month contracts. So, of course, I believe in freedom of speech. Yeah, I want every one of you to be talking to your legislators about anything you want to talk to your legislator about. The more of us who are involved, I hope every single one of you, especially the faculty senate, help every single one of you know your own personal state rep and your own personal state senator. They should know you on a first-name basis. You should know them on a first-name basis. So, yes, we want you to know your legislators. What I'm asking is that what is best for UNM? I can tell you if we speak with one voice, we will all win. When we can be organized. Because the whole time I was secretary and before I was secretary, what I heard repeatedly is UNM wasn't the only one that was criticized for this, but UNM did get more criticism than others. We have all these different voices coming and saying, we want this, we want this. One side's fighting with the other. The side's, you know, the legislators love that because that just gives them an out. They're like, they're fighting. We don't have to give them that money. When we speak with one voice, we do better. And that's what we're here for, the Office of Relations, to help us all speak with one voice. Like on the Health Science Center, we say if you're going to the legislator to talk about something that's of interest to you, separate from UNM, that's personal, whatever, we asked you you take annual leave and go talk to your legislator on that. I know on main campus you're on different contracts. I'm just telling you how these different things work. Where I am asking, if you're going to talk to a legislator about anything related to your work at UNM, I ask you to work with us on it. I want you to get the credit. I want to help you, Matt and Kayai, Shamisa and Jessica. We're all here to help support you. We want you to be your best with that. And we can help you get on agendas. We can help with that. But I'm saying if you work with us and we speak with one voice, it will be better for UNM. I'm asking you to stick with the pack. We do know that each of us defines all of us. So as we go into this legislative session, any question you have, please don't hesitate to contact me. If there's something you like or you don't like, please talk to me about that. But let's try and show what a cohesive body we are, and we will get more money from the legislature to do our work for the good of students in this state. Thank you very much for your time. If you have any questions, I'll take any questions right now.
Thank you, Barbara.
Mm-hmm. Be comments, too. Be a negative comment. Just questions. Yes, Dr. Lopez.
So thank you for your work. I had a question about the funding formula and how underserved students are being defined and whether or not there's any strategic emphasis on creating actionable evidence on race, class, gender gaps. In other words, not looking just at income alone or gender alone or class alone, and whether or not that might shape what the equity-based formula could look like.
So I'm sure y'all heard Dr. Lopez's question. And to answer that, when I was secretary, Dr. Lopez and I visited on this several times about how we could really further refine how we define the underserved students, not just from the parameters she's talking about, but through a deeper dive with that. We had some very good conversations about that. We were looking at making some of those refined changes that we would need your science, your expertise to do when I left as secretary for the funding formula. I can't say where it is now since I'm not secretary. I know it's typically been defined by, you know, income because many of our students are from minority groups to begin with. But I have asked, you know, the additional administration if we could look at that and be more precise in how we're defining that. So I continue to carry your message with that, Dr. Lopez. Any other questions? Thank you so much. And talk to your legislator to organize it with us. Thank you very much.
And when is UNM Legislation Day?
January 27th, UNM Day. Mm-hmm. January 27th, that's a Monday. What's that?
Last Monday. Mm-hmm.
Last Monday in January. So, yes, and we'll have more information on that. Thank you for asking that. Should we include that? We'll have more information for everybody. There's lots of activities on those days, and we're already working with your government relations group on that. Thanks so much.
Okay. So the next item on our agenda is Faculty Senate Operations Committee reports. We have a brief report today. An update on policy D-170, student absences. That still is at the policy committee waiting for a complete vote on that. And as soon as we finish that, we'll get it out to the Faculty Senate. Dr. Pyle is going to tell us about capital outlay competition. But is there anything else we need to mention?
Yeah. So good news today. As I think I've said this before, but since we always have a fluctuating audience member list, I want to say it again. 3 years ago, we approached then, I don't know if he was president or provost, Shawi Abdallah, and said, look, the students have the right to come up with a project that we can put forward for capital outlay funds, and the faculty need to do this too. So after several years of badgering, we did that. We got $88,000 for the College of Pharmacy, and I think about $90,000 for the art department for safety measures. So we held our competition last week, and we had a record number, 19 submissions. In the past, it had been three. I think four was our top. And I think that was probably due to putting that on all fac. My goal was I wanted you all to be involved with that, and so thank you to the senators who brought forth that information. There was a little kerfuffle about who to go to who, but in the end, we got all their proposals. And we selected there were two proposals from the Department of Speech and Hearing Sciences. So, Rick, that's why I was pointing at you, and because you brought that forward. This was to reconfigure clinical space to accommodate private clinical observation stations. So they were actually, I don't know if they're in danger of, or they are already in danger of, or with their burgeoning patient list would be in danger of HIPAA violations. And so that rose to the top. But I'd like to tell you, and the provost left, so I guess I'm not putting him on the spot. I also crafted a letter. Six other proposals were raised to the level we thought of severity. Three of them were building problems that we think is really incumbent on the university to address. And I'd just like to mention those here. Again, this is not mentioning them saying the provost said, yes, I will fund these. But do remember that last year the English department needed bathrooms. And sort of behind the scenes, we got those funded, even though they didn't win our competition. So one was the staircases at, so many of you will know these from ANS, Ortega Hall, which are tripping hazards, falling apart, you know, replete with pictures that we saw. Another was the Institute for Social Research. Apparently the windows are the same windows from the 1950s, and the people go to work in coats and gloves. And I'm actually surprised no one sues over this, but maybe I'm just more litigious than others in my heart. So I thought that was an important one. And the team also agreed that Kestetter Hall Biology put forth quite a few. But there's, I guess, a problem with transient population and drug paraphernalia being found outside Kestetter Hall where there's a breach in a wall. So students, and we're talking about thousands of students and faculty who walk through this area. So that's another one. And then there was another category of asks, and they were in the equipment category. So Professor David Hansen, he runs the Center for Stable Isotopes, and he needs a large controlled environment growth chamber for stable isotopes. And usually, maybe this is too much information, but if anyone does this in the future, you may find this interesting. Bricks and mortar are usually how that is made, but Pais was constructed, and then they said, oh, we're moving the Center for Stable Isotopes over. So it's hard to get funding for that. So, and then there were two more autoclave. These are pressure chambers that sterilize equipment for the biology department. And the third one was, I'm just going to say this and pretend it sounds like I know exactly what it is. It's a Z9 difluoride etch tool that is etching on silicon. So that's very important in their base. They don't have one. They need one. So what I'm getting at is if UNM needs to go forward, we need our faculty to be equipped with the best instrumentation and the safest places. So I felt it was important, and the team did too, to bring these to the attention of a new provost and say, hey, we need money for these things. So again, not promising that these will get funded, but I wanted to tell you that all the proposals were serious and valuable. And behind the scenes, we're actually working on another one that there could be a funding source possible, but I'm not going to announce that because it's not done yet. So I'll keep you posted. Thanks for letting me go on. Sorry, I thought that was important for everyone to hear about.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we have a few more agenda items, but by way of closing out the ops report, one of the things that I've been working on is to get with the leaders in COG, AF&T, to go have a meeting with President Stokes to discuss basically the unity of our faculty. And I'm concerned that we are one faculty governed by our faculty handbook, and I'd like for that to remain the same, and don't want to see any efforts take gain any steam that fractures our faculty in any way. And I'm hoping that all of us, just assume that all of us agree that that's the way that we should move forward, that the faculty handbook should govern all faculty on our campus. And I'll have more to say about that when we've had a chance to meet with President Stokes. As you know, the policy committee has been moved back to the vice president for finance or for administration.
Policy office.
Yeah.
The office.
The office. Okay. The office, not okay. The committee. I said committee. I'm sorry. I should have said that. So that came about in large part due to the work of our policy committee, and they're sending forward their concerns about moving that office. So it demonstrates, I think, that when we put forward a serious effort and we work together, that we can actually have an impact on the decisions that are made in our institution. But the politics behind it are always, you know, touchy. I've learned a lot about politics these days. So there are other things afoot. We have a couple of presentations this afternoon about programs. From the Honors College, we have a new core course UNM Gen Ed U Honors 203L, and Beth Elkin is here to share information about that with us. And that's not on our consent agenda because it's a new core course and has to be presented. Can't be moved through or approved in the consent agenda.
College is requesting approval to have Honors 203L Science in the 21st Century Lab count in Area 3 of General Education. The corresponding lecture, UON 203 Science in the 21st Century, is currently already approved in Area 3. At one time, this course was approved as a four-credit class that included a lab, and we've been asked to separate the lab from the lecture so that it aligns better with the other courses offered in Area 3, Physical and Natural Science. So the course was approved at one time as a four-credit class, and we're asking to have it separated. And if anybody has any questions? Yes.
Are there any restrictions on who can enroll?
We have to. So we don't have a motion yet to discuss. So do I have a motion in any way regarding this course to approve this? So I have a motion to approve new course UNM Gen Ed U Honors 203L. Do I have a second?
Second.
It's been motioned and seconded that we approve the new core course UNM Gen Ed UON 203L. Is there any discussion?
Yes. So I was wondering if there were any restrictions. I understand that Honors College courses are generally restricted to honors students, but now that it's in the core, is it open to everyone?
No, it'll still be restricted to honors students, as are the other courses we offer that are in general education. So we do currently offer an honors course in every area of general ed, and they have all been approved, but this would be the lab and course.
Can you speak into the... So folks can hear. There's a microphone.
So Honors currently offers a course in every area of general education that have been approved for general education. This course had previously been approved in that same area, but it was offered as a four-credit class. So to be consistent, we're separating it. But yes, it would still be restricted to students in Honors College.
Could I ask a follow-up?
Of course.
So I guess the only concern I would have is that students looking at the core would assume that that might be available to them, but it really isn't. So I'm wondering if it's only for honors students, then why does it need to be in the core? I'm just raising the question, because apparently it's only restricted to honors students.
Yes. So I think... You know, all of our courses at the lower division do count in areas of general education, and so the idea is for as many of our courses as possible that are requirements for the honors designation count in more than one place. So, for example, the introductory course counts in humanities. They might then take 3 hours at the 200 level, 3 hours at the 300 level, 3 hours upper division, and 3 hours any level. And the way that works best in most honors colleges, honors programs, is that they count in multiple areas. So a student who takes a 300 level honors course might also be counting that towards ANS upper division requirements. So it's an opportunity for honors students to complete general education using honors courses.
Is there any further discussion? Yes.
I just have a simplistic question. If there's seats available, why can't any student at UNM enroll in the credit for this class?
The prerequisite currently is honors 121 or 122. And so, as with any course at UNM, you can bypass a prerequisite with permission from the instructor. So I suppose that is a possibility. We at this time, though, we have zero seats available in any of the honors 200 level courses, so they do fill quickly.
Any other discussion? If there's no discussion, no further discussion, I'd like to move to the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Any abstentions?
I will abstain.
Let the record show that we have two abstentions. The ayes have it. The next item on our agenda is removal of policy C05, rights and responsibilities at the University of New Mexico, from the faculty handbook. Dr. Leslie Oakes, accompanied by Carol Stevens, will share information about that policy.
I like getting 5 minutes before Thanksgiving break to talk about policy. Hi, I'm Leslie. This is Carol Stevens, and we are working on the Faculty Policy Committee. We're involved in a larger discussion about several sections of that policy handbook that may end up being very important. In particular, there were items that got spread around the faculty handbook that we believe, and we're working with AFNT and other folks, probably belong in Section B. If you remember, Section B is the section of the policy manual that AFNT is in charge of, and it involves all those issues that are likely to come up in an AFNT discussion. All of kind of the faculty, the rules about job titles, et cetera. So in this process, we realized that a few policies had drifted and were not easy for faculty to find or deal with. So what we're asking and what we're working on is trying to move those sections back into the AFNT section where the people with the most expertise in that area can deal with them. So, and I have to bring Carol because she knows most about policy in general. And I'm really pleased to hear that the policy office is being moved where it probably should end up instead of in legal. The first one that we're worried about is C05. For those of you who have an interest in history, these were things that have been around since like the 1970s, and they involve things like campus violence, emergency control, all kinds of things that came up in the 1970s. And they've just been there, and parts of this policy have actually been taken away, so the policy doesn't really make sense. So we're going to try and get rid of that C05, and we're going to move other sections, beginning with C07, the faculty discipline policy, C190, which is all of that work that was done on lectures a couple years ago, C200, which is sabbatical leave and the ability of faculty to ask questions about their sabbatical leave, C250, which is academic leave for principal lecturers, and F90, which is the branch campus policy on academic freedom and tenure. And we're going to work on moving them back into where we believe they really belong. They belong there for two reasons, as I said, because AFNT has specialized knowledge, and it's where faculty are likely to look for help if they run into problems. But it's also because the way they get revised is unified with the other sections of that Section B, so that we won't have some policies with different ways of getting revised and other policies that take longer and have to be more thoughtful. Anything else?
So just a reminder to our senators, as we discussed earlier in the semester, we're bringing this to the Faculty Senate as an information item. Next meeting, it will appear on our agenda as an action item. So you have time to go back to your areas, to your colleagues, share this information, get feedback, and then we'll actually have a vote on this at our next meeting. And the same holds true for the next agenda item, which is moving policy C07, faculty disciplinary policy, to the faculty handbook, Section B, academic freedom and tenure. Do you have information to share with us on that?
Well, she kind of did it all at once. I'm just
Any, so it's all in there together?
Yeah, let me just remind you that that policy is a policy that's under review. It's been under review for a while. We're moving the existing policy so that that can also be, any changes can also be reviewed by AF&T. By the way, if anyone has questions or needs to get in touch with the policy committee so that we can come and explain things that seem odd to you, not that we would do anything odd, but if you think they're odd, Finney can always get in touch with me, or you can reach me, L. Oaks. Please let us know, and we'll be glad to find someone who can come talk to your unit or just answer questions for you.
And also, I want to give a thanks to both you, Leslie, and Carol for the hard work that you're doing parsing through all of this information for us. And if we have, I'm assuming, is Rick still? Rick, we can put on the web page information about this that we can refer to.
Yes.
Can we do that? So we'll make sure that we get a link up and maybe send that out over the listserv, just some additional background information about these two issues so that you have something to refer to over the next few weeks, as I'm sure you're thinking about this intently. But we'll put that link up, right?
Okay. I have one point of clarification as you're reviewing this. On policy C05 that the policy committee is proposing will be removed, everything in that policy exists in other policies. So as you look at it and you go, well, we can't just have this go away. It's either in a regent policy, it's in C07, the discipline policy, or it's in campus violence, or it's in the emergency control. But everything that is in that odd C05 right now is housed in other university policy. So I just wanted to point that out as you look at it. And we could certainly give you where if you need to know that or would like to know that.
Any questions? Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you.
Is there any public comment? Hearing none, we'll move to our next agenda item. Any comments from our faculty senators? Hearing none, we are adjourned.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Be safe. Eat turkey.
Really?